I don't know what number this is, but we've done a bunch of these sober eating workshops. And I'm going to be introducing our speaker today. I'm Adam. I'm a compulsive overeater. Maybe we should set the tone here. Let's say the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. That's all we have. We may not have printed enough of the worksheets. Not the worksheets. The I don't know. But if we can surrender some and then share, that'd be great. So Miriam will be passing it out. So you can follow along. You don't need it for now. If it's possible to make extras, Miriam, during that course of time, we can. And maybe, Miriam, you can take one of these. Okay. Yeah, and that's just a single page. Okay. So for a raise of hands, how many people have been to this before? Okay. And how many people are here for their first time at this workshop? Oh, wonderful. Okay. Welcome, everybody. Our spirit here is really to be helpful and to help people really connect to this idea of what does it mean to be sober in Overeaters Anonymous, or at least speaking from our experience, what sobriety looks like. I want to share something very quickly, is that for me, I'm maintaining 135-pound weight loss, and I've been abstinent for 21 years. And a testament to the gift of the program, but I want to share how powerful the disease is for me. I was sitting with my children, and we were talking about what's going to happen when I become demented and who's going to take care of me. And my son said to me, "Are you going to eat then?" And I thought, I'm like, "Oh yeah." I thought to myself, "Oh, I get to eat then. Oh my God, I'm going to get to eat then. I finally found a time when I get to eat." And my reflex, because of the program, was to say no. Then he said to me, "Well, what if you argue with me? Could you eat then?" And I said, "Oh, I can eat if I argue with him when I'm demented. In 20, you know, God willing, 20 years from now." And he said, I said, "No, I can't eat." But what I'm highlighting is the power of this disease for me is it's always looking for an opportunity. Even, I don't care if I'm levitating in some retreat, right? It's always looking for an opportunity to practice and to engage, because once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So what does it mean for me to have freedom and sobriety with food? I want to introduce Tim. Tim C. is going to be sharing his story and has a lot of experience in different types of participation in the program and what it means to be sober and have freedom from food for Tim. So please enjoy our speaker, and afterwards we're going to have a little bit of a didactic portion. We'll bring somebody up to want help surrendering, and then we will have breakout groups, but we'll lead you through it.
Here's Tim. Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. Let me pass out my pictures. I'm abstinent 10 years, and I'm down 99 pounds as of this month. And why I say that is my disease loves vagueness. It really, even 10 years in, it loves to get vague. And so it's always a specific number. So I did not grow up a heavy child. My first picture there, that's the way I live my life. I was in a fight with the world, and I used many, many, many different things to keep my weight off. Whether it was as a young kid, I grew up on a farm in the Midwest, so it was a lot of work. Then it was sports. Then it was drugs and alcohol in my high school years, and then it was obsession for girlfriends. You know, I would come in in thin to a relationship, and I would always leave fat. That was, I did that several times. The weight did start coming on in a little bit in high school, then in college, and then, after college, it started piling on 40 to 60 pounds at a time. When drugs and alcohol were taken away from me at the age of 29, it was literally a delineation. One day they worked, the next day they did not, and I did not have to do anything to surrender that. The food came in, and I gained about 60 to 65 pounds in 4 to 6 months. I used extreme exercise at this point to lose the weight. I first came into OA when I was 33 years old. I came in through Al-Anon, and I immediately got that I have a physical allergy, a mental obsession for certain types of food. I knew it was flour and sugar right away. I knew flour and sugar right away. I got that. I surrendered those foods, and I was still working the steps in Al-Anon, and I was being partially honest in OA. I wasn't really talking to anybody about, because that was set down for a good 7 or 8 or 9 months. No problems. It was like they talk about that pink cloud, but then it started to kind of slide back in. And I really wasn't talking to anybody about that. I wasn't talking to anybody about the chicken going from chicken to fried chicken, because it was just chicken. I was just reporting chicken. And when my weight went up from inside a healthy body range that we agreed upon to outside, it was my excuse. My sponsor at the time said, "You gained 5 pounds this month." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm working out." So, I was very, very, very well defended. I was well defended, and there was no commitment to rigorous honesty. There really was no commitment to identifying those foods that I'm talking to, because now they're starting to get louder and louder and louder. After the newness of it wore off, because I'm good at doing anything one time. If you look back at my resume, one time, I'm rock solid. I will do anything one time. But if you ask me to continue something, I really get weak. And so I started to walk my way right out of the program. And I didn't have the action plan that the book talks about to keep me engaged in this rigorous honesty. So by the time I picked up my first donut, I didn't have the skill set or the ability to pick up that phone, and the donut made complete sense. So I was out for 5 years, and I gained 120 pounds. And so I got married. Everything on the outside looked well, except for my weight. Everything looked just fine. But I was eating when the beast is on me, when I cannot stop eating. I remember that last day clearly, and I tingle a little bit when I think about when it was on me that last day and I could not stop eating. I kept going back to the store and I would just keep eating. And it wasn't carrots, it was those foods that I needed to shut the voices down. That literally for just a moment, because at the end it's just a moment where it shuts them down. And I have to eat more to keep shutting it down. And as soon as there was any more room, the voice would come back and I'd eat more and I'd shove more in and I couldn't stop. And I still I threw up in my mouth that night, and it's funny. I thought that as I look back, I thought that was my bottom, and it wasn't, because I live in Studio City, and I drove all the way out to Pasadena, so nobody would see me come back in fat, and because I had to protect the image of myself. And man, thank God there. I don't know if anybody's from Pasadena. The meetings are different. They're just different. I'm not saying good or bad. For me, I did not hear what I needed to hear. And thank goodness, because guess what? I was scared enough because I knew there was no end to this eating. I saw a picture, and I knew I was going to sneak back in, and I couldn't sneak back in. I had to come back to the Sunday morning meeting where I knew there was a very, very clear message of, this is the how do we arrest the disease of compulsive overeating? So I came back in. I talked to Adam. Actually, I've had two sponsors in OA, and I've had them both twice. When I was leaving, I tried to grab onto Adam. When I was on my way out, I changed sponsors and I tried to grab onto Adam. I was unwilling. I was unwilling to surrender my way. And I came back in and I tried again to get the same sponsor I had the first time. And I just got the sense after a week or two that it wasn't, I didn't think this guy had it, but I knew one guy who did. Because at 10 years, he was talking about the 5 meetings a week. He was talking about a serious commitment to identifying those foods and surrendering to those foods, that they're no longer part of the equation when it comes to his meal plan. And so I came back to him and he goes, okay, so let's talk about your abstinence. He goes, and I knew right away flour and sugar. I knew right away that I could not handle flour and sugar. He's like, great. I went in 30 days, no flour or sugar. But then we sat down, and we've only had, we kind of talked about it. Maybe in the 10 years that I've worked with him, we've only had a total of 10 discussions about food. We don't really talk about food. We talk about anger. See how these guys are laughing? They know. That's what he and I talk about. So, because if you see that first picture, you'll see that's me. That's me, unaided. And so he asked me a question. He goes, what have you put on your plate in the last 30 days that as soon as you put it on, you were looking for the second helping? And here's the thing is like, so we're very well defended people. And it's like, I guess I was just number one of two things. I thought I was going to get more of it, or I thought I was just beaten enough to be honest about it. That if I'm talking to a food, I've already lost. Carrots don't talk to me. They might talk to you. They just don't talk to me. And it's critical that we identify the foods that don't work for you. Not me. And that's why I ask my guys not to talk about their abstinence. They don't talk about their food to anyone else because we can, especially when we're new, we can get great ideas. I should be doing it this way, and I should be doing it this way. When my sponsor said, hey, what foods have you want to have the second portion of? And I was like, oh, right. I knew immediately it was rice and potatoes. And he's like, oh, well, those are your alcoholic foods. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. But I was like, it's just potato salad. Just potato salad. Hold on. And he goes, Tim. And here's really, really the crux of, and it's still a struggle for me today. He said, Tim, he goes, if you play with any form of your alcoholic foods, you're eventually going to walk yourself back to the original one. So if it was rice, oh, I can do with brown rice. But eventually, I always find a way back to, because I need to have relief. I must have relief. And if it's an option, for me, it's a problem. It's a problem because then I start to think about it, and then I start to dance with it. How can I get it in and make it look like, oh, it's just this, it's just chicken, it's fried chicken, you know. It you can pick any number of things, and so it was that I remember. He goes, Tim, you're going to trust my thinking, or you're going to trust yours. You're going to trust my thinking, or you're going to trust yours. And it's the same today. Nothing has changed. Because he sees me better than I see me. I see the idealized version of who I am. I'll never see me the way he sees me. He sees me from like, because I'm in the jungle of Tim. I'm fighting my way through this world, doing the best I can. He kind of sees it from a drone point of view. He's just kind of hovering above. And when I ask, that's the best part. I love this guy because he just waits for me to ask. And it's generally a lot of pain. It's generally a lot of pain when I say, oh, please help me. And he's like, oh, this is what I'm seeing. So it's either you're going to trust what we have to say because we've been doing it for years, or you're going to trust your thinking. And that's really what it comes down to. Because I need help seeing my food and my plate with clarity, because I have a disease. I have a disease that always tells me that it's okay. And when he walked me through this process, that I just don't put those on my plate anymore. And that he promised me, as long as I don't pick up any of those alcoholic foods, I will never have another food problem. And that's been the case. I've got a lot of problems. I have a lot of problems. I've got wives, I've got kids, I've got jobs, I've got problems. And guess what? You guys don't give a shit about those problems. But one thing you care about, and the one thing we talk about, is how do we arrest this disease? How do we arrest this disease of compulsive overeating? And for me, it's a commitment to identifying those foods that produce the twofold disease, the phenomenon of craving and the mental obsession. I can get that by eating too much, so it's portion controlled. Because if I go to seconds or thirds or fourths or fifths, you know, all of a sudden I can trigger that disease by quantity. So it is, how do we go about doing this? And I can't do it alone. My mind, I still have the same mind that tells me it's okay. I still have the same mind. And guess what? I just share it. I just share what's going on. I just tell him what's going on. I don't feel my feelings. I think that's overrated. I just tell him. I just tell him that I've spiritually leapfrogged him. You know, I just tell him that that I've gone past him in the 12 steps. I just say it out loud. You know, and the best part is he goes, well, tell me, Tim. He goes, because I think my program's big enough to handle your opinion of it. So I just keep sharing. And so he's given me a place to be honest with him. And so what the one thing that as we go through this and we start to look at those foods, honesty and trust that we're not here to take anything from you. We're not here to take anything. We're trying to help you see something that you might not be able to see. And so that's what we're going to go through right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. Glad you leapfrogged me. Feels good. It's cool. Okay, so Miriam has more handouts. So if you didn't get a handout, we're now going to move into the more... from the book portion, and the Ore will be leading that. We may pipe in a little bit, and the spirit of this again is to, this is just a beginning. If anyone's struggling to launch a beginning here and to initiate, this is about how do we begin to get sober in this program, and using the same language of addiction that we use in any 12-step program and the mothership program, especially, what does it mean to be sober and have freedom in our program? So Ore is going to lead this part, and meet Ore.
My name is Ore. I'm a compulsive overeater. So Tim lied to you. I am here to take your food. I'm here to take your food. Let's talk about, before we get into this, I just want to talk about a few facts. A muffin is cake. That's one fact that we need to get out the way. A muffin is cake. Hold the mic closer. It's funny, in my compulsive overeating mind, somehow a muffin was better than a donut, right? Here's another thing that we need to get out the way. A plate is 3D, right? There's several dimensions to a plate. There's the actual plate, the physical circumference of the plate, and then there's also the plate can go up, right? So I just want to get that out the way. Let's go ahead and turn to these worksheets right quick, all right? Sober eating. Somebody has access to... Somebody has a phone that they can Google sober. Let's look at the definition of what sober is. I think that's a good starting point. What does it mean to be sober? Go ahead and read that all for me.
Oh, read it.
Yeah, go ahead and read that for me,
sober,
bro.
Not intoxicated or affected by the use of alcohol or drugs, abstaining from or habitually abstemious in the use of alcoholic drink or other intoxicants.
Mm-hmm.
Straightforward and serious, not exaggerated, emotional.
I like that one. I like that. So how do we get drunk on food? I like how my sponsor talks about being drunk on food. How do I get high on food? What produces that sense of ease and comfort for me? Okay, we got some few ideas out here.
Quantity,
definitely.
Sugar,
certain substances, right?
Visual, full plate.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. That eye hunger, right? All right. Okay, all right. Let's get into this right here. This is not a prescribed food plan, but method for defining a food plan by consulting with others. I'm going to have to do this rapper style. Yo, yo, yo. Can you hear me? Check 1, 2. What is this? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is not a prescribed food plan, but a method for defining a food plan by consulting with others. The part that I don't like about that is consulting with others. I don't want anybody to know what I'm eating. The secrecy. You know, if I'm secret about what I'm eating, I'm left to my own ideas. And in my own ideas, a muffin is a cake. A muffin is better than a donut. I don't want to be told what I need to eat. I have the ideas. Please don't take away my food. One of the hardest moments in this 3 years and 6 months is when my dietitian told me to go from 1 cup of rice to a 1/2 cup of rice. Are you kidding me? Has anybody ever eaten a 1/2 cup of rice? She told me to go from 5 ounces of protein to 4 ounces of protein. Do you know how little food that is? And contrary to popular belief, I am not 25. I'm 39. And as a 39-year-old man, I'm starting to eat less. Sober eating is just the beginning of the program. This is just the entry ticket. Look, I can sit in a meeting and tell you how great my food plan is. Oh, my God, I'm working it the right way. I got the best food plan in the nation. I'm so superior to you because my food plan is so clean. Really? Is that what I'm going to bed feeling good about? My food plan is so clean. Perhaps there's a little bit more to this program than just how good my food is. Look, but don't let me minimize the importance. Like all this starts for me at the plate. Because I came in at 19, they had this term. It was such a shaming term, but it acknowledged the real truth at the time. It was a certain trend. It was called fat serenity. Like, I don't use that, because I really do feel like it's a way to feel superior. It's a way to shame people. But it does acknowledge a serious truth and a trend that was happening. You know, here it is. People had 12 years of abstinence. They were talking from this spiritually high place of what program did for them, but yet they were still using food. Clearly, like me, you can see when I'm using food. Unfortunately, you can see when I'm using food. If you couldn't see it, oh my God, that'd be so great. It would be so awesome if I didn't gain hundreds of pounds when I was using. Sober eating may help us to surrender and to access a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity, both with our food and our lives. So the entry ticket is me getting sober with food. And then I get into the real work. And then I receive another gift. I gain access to a power. And make no mistake about it, this whole work is so I can access power. And not only the power to help me with my food and my addiction, but also the power to help me with all areas of my life. By surrendering this piece of by surrendering my food, it's given me power to surrender in many areas of my life. I love how Tim talked about, he does. He has a lot of problems. Look, we meet every Sunday, and for 3.5 years, I've heard his problems. I mean, his anger is taking a couple of guys out. Not in a while. No, he's much better. Much better today. Much better. Much better. There's so much more to life that I need help with. You know, look, I got this nice dinner jacket on right now, and I'm looking so clean and suave, and, you know, looking like Chocolate Thunder right now, and, you know, giving you the goods right now, but make no mistakes about it, I got problems that need solving. This is not the only approach to abstinence. This isn't the only approach. This is not a dogma that we're trying to force upon you here. This is just one man's idea. No, just playing. This is just a group of guys that have found a method. This is just a method that works for us. And hopefully, this can provide some clarity for you. What is food addiction? The doctor's opinion from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about allergy of the body. Allergy is defined as an abnormal reaction, right? So we know about some allergies out there, like my mother, when she eats shellfish, her throat closes up and she's clawing at her neck. And we know that when I'm around dogs, pet dander, I have an abnormal reaction to that. Most of the populace do not have that reaction. That's why it's an abnormal reaction, right? What are some other allergies out there?
Bees,
yes. Bees, peanut butter. I feel so sorry for them. Peanut butter, peanuts. They can't do peanuts. Any other abnormal reactions out there? Seafood, yep. Shrimp, lactose, yep. What else? Okay, pollen. So we understand the definition of an allergy. So when it comes to food, what is my allergy? What is my abnormal reaction? Well, I talked about that kind of last night. When I eat certain foods or I eat in a certain way, when I overeat, like let's say, for instance, I decided today, you know, instead of that one cup of rice, I wanted 2 cups of rice. Right? Who knows to say that that won't trigger something in me to where I want more? Like, certain people eat and they're satiated. We all know and hate them. Hate those people. The claim jumper cake is 7 layers. How do you only eat a couple of forks, like they pick at it with the fork and they're done? Oh, and we've all heard the thing of, oh, that's too rich. I think that's just a myth. Has anything ever been too rich for me? Never. I never forget this night, that one night I had this super, this is back when, this is how, shows you how old I am. Back in the day, McDonald's used to have super size. And I had a supersized chocolate shake. And I drank that chocolate shake like my life depended on it, because it did. It freaking did. You see, I didn't use that F-bomb. No F-bombs today. I've grown overnight. And I remember that sugar was coursing through my veins. I was like a zombie off that thing. And I wanted more. And I wanted more. Let me rephrase that. No, I didn't want more. I needed more. I needed it. Abnormal reaction, yes? So start thinking about, what is it that you have an abnormal reaction to? What produces that for you? We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics, when we talk about a chronic alcoholic, we're not talking about marijuana, the chronic. We're talking about this has happened over a period of time, a long period of time. This is not an acute illness. This isn't just appear overnight. This is something that I've been practicing for a long, long time. And that's what makes this addiction, that's what makes this an addiction. Like, this has happened over a period of time. These chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Does that fit anyone in here? I said, does that fit anyone in here? Thank you. This is participatory. I'm not up here just running my mouth because I want to burn calories. So what I like to do with my sponsees is I like to do a little translation for this. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of overeating on these chronic alcoholics or undereating is a manifestation of allergy. The phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate eater. These allergic types, ORA, can never safely use overeating in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found that I cannot break it, once having lost my self-confidence, my reliance upon things humans, my problems pile up on me and become astonishingly difficult to solve. The reason I do that exercise is to put me right in the work. I need to identify in, and that's what I did. I just put myself in there, and it hits home for some reason when I put me in it, and I talk from the me perspective in that part. Later, the big book talks about the obsession of the mind. See, the beauty about this is if I'm not triggering the allergy, if I'm not engaging the allergy of the body, I don't have a problem. If I stay on my food plan, if I abstain from certain items, I don't have a problem. If we could just stay on a diet, how many diets have we tried? How many ways of controlling have we tried? And ultimately, they end. Right? If I could just stay on my food plan, I'm all right. But there's another piece to my addiction, and that is the obsession of the mind. That's a stinger. Everybody heard that? I got 15 more minutes. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they have see that they see others taking with impunity after they've succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope of his recovery. Who does that fit? Let me see your hands. Thank you. So what I want you to do is put you in it. Read that from a me, the I, me, and my perspective, and it's going to hit home even more. Overeaters Anonymous definition of abstinence. Abstinence is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. It's surprising that they even had to come up with that definition. Why? Why did they come up with that definition? Well, it was I think it was in response to the trend of that fat serenity trend. It was so ambiguous of what it means to abstain in Overeaters Anonymous. But you know what? Like, look, I can't define your how you use food. Not everybody uses food like I do. So when Tim talked about being honest, we have to be honest with ourselves and how we use. I've never used ketchup in my life. I don't, you know, I'm not sitting there like pouring massive amounts of quantity of ketchup all over things because I want to get a sugar hit off ketchup. You know, that's just not my thing. What I will use is corn chips, though. Corn chips, I don't know what it is. I don't want to weigh and measure a goddamn corn chip. I want the whole basket. Something about it, when I see some corn chips, when I smell some corn chips, I'm looking at that thing like my mouth physically starts watering. It produces a comfort within me. Rice, it doesn't really do that for me unless I have, like, you know, massive amounts of quantity of rice. But one cup of rice, it's like, all right, let me just get this done and move on with my life. It doesn't talk to me like that. Not being able to stop eating certain food once you start. Obsessive craving for certain foods. Thinking you can control your intake of alcoholic foods. Negotiating with food. Ooh, who's negotiating? Who wants to? Yes. Oh, those are the brave ones right there. You guys didn't even let me finish my question. Those are people who want to recover. Who cares? Who wants to admit that they're still negotiating? I know. It's all right. It's all right. You'll give it up. You're going to give it up today. You're going to give it up today. Praise the Lord. We're going to give it up today. So can I get an amen on that? Amen. We're going to give it up today. We're going to give it up. What is sobriety with food? So this is really important. What is sobriety with food? When we're talking about sober eating, what is sobriety with food? A commitment to identifying these foods which produce an allergic reaction and an alcoholic response. A belief that we owe it to ourselves to deal with our alcoholic foods like an alcoholic deals with alcohol. Ugh. It's just food, right? It's just cheesecake. Everybody else is eating cheesecake. We have to, I have to take the tiger out of the cage 3 times a day. That's what makes it different. That's what makes it different. We got to take the tiger and the monkey out the cage 3 times a day. Look, I love the, it was like, Adam, how did it go? Look, I have to eat. No, but you don't have to eat that way. That way that I ate, the destructive and damaging way that I ate. You gotta take the tiger out of the cage. All right, I'm sorry. I'm like, that's some things I hear in programs. Just like, yeah. Our aim, with the help of a higher power, is to arrest the addiction by removing foods that activate our cravings. Yep. I can make sane decisions about your food, but not about my own. Eesh. Going back to the piece about consultation, I can make great decisions in a vacuum. I can make great decisions about food in a vacuum. And that's what we're here to do. We're going to break out in groups, and we're going to seek consultation. We're going to rely upon someone else's sound judgment. So when I go to Tim and I say, Tim, you know what? I want to have a flatbread pizza instead of a normal pizza from Pizza Hut. Isn't flatbread better? It's holistic. It's gluten-free. Tim will say, Ore. Pizza is in the name. If it's pizza, it's pizza. Sugar-free ice cream is all right, right, Tim? Tell you a funny story about sugar-free ice cream real quick. I was on this no sugar, no flour kick, but yet, and I'm calling myself abstaining. This is why we don't make decisions in a vacuum. I was abstaining. I was technically abstinent. I wasn't eating sugar. But here it is. I was eating a half gallon of sugar-free ice cream. Did you hear what I just said? I was eating a half gallon of sugar-free ice cream, and I was abstinent. Wasn't I abstinent? Get out of here. Probably not. See, that's what happens when you rely upon somebody else's judgment. A prescribed amount of food. Prescribed amount of food. My dietitian prescribes the amount of food that I have. For example, a one-plate rule of weighing and measuring. The plate will typically be a balance of non-alcoholic foods that support sober eating. Oh, no. Why are there struggles with food sobriety? With such a simple plan, eating only what has been approved, how do we as addicts willfully disregard our own sobriety commitment, resulting in a binge or an effort to control and enjoy food? Willfulness. I want to do it my way. Entitlement. I can have anything I want. Other people are doing it. Denial or minimizing. Oh, man, denial. Defiance. Isolation, no meeting, no outreach calls. I know better. Hunger. Ego, edging God out. So these are all the things that are obstructing our ability to surrender and practice food sobriety. Once the obsession has been triggered, we begin to negotiate with food, eating gray area foods. Fat serenity. Roseanne coined that. Selective honesty, editing what you tell ourselves. I like that. I love selective editing. Not revealing the full truth of the situation. This is the way the obsession is triggered. And obsession is where? Where does obsession live? Can somebody tell me? In the mind. And if the mind is corrected, if we have a spiritual experience that resolves the mind issue, wow. Wow. That's the only, I think that's the only way that, you know, a 485-pound man can lose 240 pounds. Like, that was not by just some sheer amount of will that I could muster up. That is, man, something was corrected in my mind. Some modicum of sanity was restored to me to where I don't have to eat like I did. What does struggling with food sobriety sound like? This is really going to get people. I ate too much, but here's the recovery. Has anybody heard that one? My food is getting a little wonky. Have we heard that one? Yeah, what the hell is wonky mean? What is wonky? What is wonky? My food is a little bit wonky. My food is a little bit wonky. We know. Is that in the dictionary, wonky? I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food. I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food? Okay. I see how that works. Technically, I am abstinent. Does anybody in here have a technical abstinence today? Who wants to admit that today? You are the one. You are... The Bill Clinton of abstinence. Ooh, that's rough. I like her. You gonna be in my group. That's some real honesty right there. So what does it look like to be sober with food? We're gonna have somebody come up right now. I got a little ditty. Like to hear it? Here it go. The 10-step promises from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. Are we still fighting? Yeah. I know what that feels like, to be in a fight with the food. Let's ignore the people part. Jeez. I'm fighting right now with some people. But... the food part. Are we still fighting the reality? For by this time, sanity will have returned. How many people can claim sanity around the food? We will seldom be interested in overeating or whatever you're... Ooh, how many people can claim that? That they're seldom interested in the way in using the food. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. I'll give you a real picture of this. One day I'm distraught and I would come into work. You know, I just get up, Mr. Grinch, like, you know, just my angry black guy face on. And I'm a monster and I go down to the cafeteria to get breakfast and they lay out a fresh platter of muffins. A whole assortment of muffins. I love them muffins. And a part of me is like, I wish I could eat that whole tray of muffins. Oh, motherfucker, I'm gonna eat that whole tray of muffins. And what that does is send off a red flag. I'm not in a good place. Nah. And then the thought comes to me, bro, if you had those muffins, it'd be game over in life. You'd be right back to 485 pounds and all the misery that comes along with that. I don't want to go back to that way of life. Let me call my sponsor. Damn it. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. What happened to that white knuckle thing? Getting up and, oh, today I'm going to be abstinent. In my 3 years and 6 months of recovery, I've never gotten up and said, today I'm going to be abstinent. It's been given to me. The gift has been given to me. What am I to deserve this gift where I'm not driven by this overwhelming desire to compulsively overeat anymore? It was given to me as a result of the work. It just came, that thought, that idea of, let me just follow my food plan. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes, baby. It just comes. It just comes. It just comes. Oh. That is the miracle of it. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. We're going to have people come up now. Ultimately, I may have problems, but food is no longer one of them. Jay-Z says, you guys know about this one right here. Jay-Z says, I have 99 problems. I'm going to modify this one, but the food ain't one of them. Thank you, Jay-Z. So this is the part of, we need a bold spirit today. Oh, okay. She volunteered, didn't even know what. We need someone who's at a place, a jumping off point, where they feel like they want to surrender. They want to surrender this aspect of it. And we're going to go through an exercise. You are burning, and we're going to ask you to come on up. Let's give her a hand. Let's give her a hand. Yeah.
So right now, Brian and Ore and Craig are going to help with this exercise. I want to remind everybody, this is all based on our experience. We're not the only game in town. It's really important. You can find freedom in Overeaters Anonymous. This is not the only way of doing things. This speaks to some people. It may not speak to everyone, which is fine. But for us, it's just based on our experience of what freedom looks like around food. And some of this is very, very obvious, in the sense that it's written very clearly in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholics don't use alcohol in that disturbing way. They don't use it at all. What does that mean for us, and how do we connect to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the treatment of addiction?
So she can write it down.
Yeah.
Come on over here.
What's your name? Shelley, welcome.
Hi, I'm Brian, compulsive overeater. Okay, so Shelley, I have a pen. So the goal of this exercise is to identify those foods that are alcoholic foods that you...
10 lines?
Well, we have 10 lines, but we'll be gentle, don't worry.
I need a tiny more line.
So the question is, in your thinking about your food and what you eat, what comes to mind as an alcoholic food? What's the most obvious thing?
And do you want me to say, like, sugar or specific sugar things?
Sugar is one of those things.
Flour.
So let's write down sugar at the top.
Flour. Fried foods.
Okay.
Any desserts? I mean, does that...
Any desserts. All right, let's write down any desserts.
Pizza.
Okay, pizza. So, what about bread?
Yeah, bread?
Bread?
Diet, anything with artificial sweetener. Big.
Okay. Artificial sweeteners.
Soda.
And this list is different for everybody. It's not one list for everybody. Each of us have alcoholic foods that, as Ore talked about, that excite and cause an abnormal reaction of craving.
Chinese food, Mexican food, any kind of ethnic foods. I don't know if that's specific enough. But
Write it down.
There's one thing. May I?
Yeah.
That's all good. A quickie. I don't know exactly what it says, but we invite you to take in this moment and tell me if you agree. Will we give you attention? We are here for you, and you guys don't write your plan yet. I don't even know if you have the writing yet. They don't have it yet?
No, you'll get a
kick ass. Good deal. I wanted to just say we're here for... This is what we do, right? Like in sober eating. We're here for you right now.
That's right.
This is your moment.
Wow.
How does it feel, Shelley, to write these foods down?
It feels like a release, and just the honesty of it feels good.
Okay. Great. So we have sugar, we have flour, we have fried food, any desserts, pizza, bread, artificial sweeteners, soda, Chinese food, and Mexican food. Just to start, well, is there anything else that comes to mind? What about potatoes or French fries? Fried food, yeah, but what about baked potatoes?
Any kind.
Okay.
And corn.
Corn.
Okay.
Corn off of a cob. Corn.
Okay.
Great. And are there any foods that you're willing to give up?
Pizza.
All right. Let's put a check mark down by the pizza. Pizza. What about recreational sugar?
I've done it, so I could do it again. I was blessed with having 4 months.
So I don't want to force you to give up anything. I mean, the reason I ask you about sugar is because I have a problem with recreational sugar too, and I know it's a very common problem, and that's why I'm asking about it. But I don't want to force you to do something. I want you, it has to come from you, because you're the one who has to live with it.
I could do that. I could definitely.
Okay. Very good. That's right. Any other foods?
I'm supposed to be saying yes. I'm going to willing to go to any lengths, and it's like I could say the words, but it's like the actions are.
That's all right.
Right. That's all right.
Is there anything else on the top of your head that you're going, I don't want to say that?
Right.
Artificial sweeteners.
You said it. Old news, you repeated it, see? I don't think, artificial sweeteners don't work for her.
Yeah, right?
Big time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Killer.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's willingness to give up foods that you don't want to give up. And that is surrender. That is true surrender.
And there's something I wanted to admit. I wanted to just say, at this point, all Shelley's doing is writing a list. So that's the first action. To admit this stuff is huge. But the action is simply writing it. Right? So what's are we on to the next?
So the next section is eating behaviors and attitudes that trigger the obsession.
Can you think of some eating?
eating behaviors?
The one that we hear, hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
Okay.
Big time.
Big all time. Of those. What about eating in front of the television?
Television, in the car.
In the car. Okay, so let's write down television at the top. And the car. What about fast food?
Fast foods, definitely.
What about standing up at the counter?
Standing up, period. I mean, yeah.
Standing up.
Standing up, big time. I hear your stomach.
What?
I hear your stomach. Are you
hungry? Is my stomach? No, I'm not hungry, actually. What about? I guess your list got my stomach going. Yeah.
So I want to say here that what I'm witnessing is cornering, I call it cornering the disease. How do I give the disease, as funny and as some of this stuff is, how do I give, in honesty, my disease no room? Food is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It's insidious, so much so that we have to do a sober eating workshop. Right? That's how crazy it is. Right? What's obvious is so not obvious. What does it mean to corner the disease where there's no room? Right? So I can, where am I going to practice it standing up? Sure. Right? I have to. So what we're doing right now is saying, where could your disease come out? And we're talking about what are you willing to surrender?
Thanks, Adam. What about eating out of bags?
Definitely.
All right, let's put that down. So these are the behaviors that can trigger an abnormal reaction. So eating out of bags, I know for me, I can't eat out of bags. I have to put the food on a plate before I eat it. Or the bag becomes an endless behavior.
Correct.
Okay, let's go to people you can reach out to for food decisions. So you can put my name down, Brian. You can call me. I'll give you my number. Craig, you can call Craig. Who else can you call?
A good friend that was a sponsor, Jen.
Okay, let's put Jen's name down. So I practice calling my trusted advisors, people I know who are abstinent, who can give me direction with the food that I eat, because I know on my own I can't make good choices about my food. Even 2.5 years in, I can't make good choices about my food. So I always reach out. I'll call Adam, I'll call Tim, I'll call Craig, and I'll ask them, hey, what do you guys think about this? It's called a flourless pancake. Do you think it's okay? And what's the second word in flourless pancake? They're not okay. So I think it's important to have that network. You know, the Big Book uses the word we constantly. We. It's not a self-help program. So we have to have that network of people we can rely upon. And I feel fortunate that I have that group.
It helps writing it, and it's like I know it, but just having it in black and white, there's something powerful about that.
Absolutely.
And I feel isolated and on my own and don't want to reach out, and, you know, I tend to do it after I've eaten. And, like, I hear over and over, call me before, you know,
call me
the first bite.
You know, for me, I remember the hopeless demoralization that the food brought. Every time I went back to the food, I became demoralized. And I think what you're talking about, Shelley, is clarity. You're getting clarity with your food. And it's emotional, isn't it?
Really, very emotional.
Yeah. It's a hard process.
It is. And yeah. Feeling vulnerable, but it's like, you guys are my peeps. You get me. And it's like, I don't care. I feel desperate, so I don't care. I'm out of my comfort zone big time, but that's good.
So and this is what surrender looks like. Surrendering and finding clarity, understanding what your triggers are and what causes what causes your disease to flourish. And this is what I practice. This is what Craig practices, because this is what brings about true sobriety. Why don't we give her a big hand?
Thank you so much. In the past, we've had people bawling. You're not alone. You're not alone. Okay, can you raise your hand if you are going to be leading one of the groups? We're going to be breaking out into groups right now, and we're going to have people 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Okay. So right now, Tim, you want to help me with this? And Miriam? We're going to divide the room, and we're going to pass out the worksheet that you just heard, Sobriety with Food Handout, and we're going to break into groups. How do we want to break the room up, Tim?
So are we eight or nine groups? Do we have nine? Okay, so we got nine. So why don't we have the people, nobody rush. Everybody get their handouts. So why isn't this group of people, all the people against that wall, take some chairs and go to that corner right there, okay? Not you, Sam. Oh, you're handing them out? Excellent, okay. Let's do it quietly as possible so we can get this organized. Will the back three tables here, from here on back, why don't you take and go to that corner, in that corner right there. Iski, will you take them? Thank you. Yeah, from these back three tables right here. Yeah, go to that corner right there. Iski's going to help you guys out. If you need to grab a chair, grab a chair. Hey, guys, let's just keep it quiet so we can get this organized. Okay, so this front table and these two front tables. Yes, this table and these two front tables. Let's go right here. You're going to need to take your chairs. Okay? All right? These back two tables. Okay, you're going to stay. Those back two tables and the people along the wall are going to go right here. Right here. We're going to slide this table forward. We're getting the sheets. Yep. And we're gonna circle right up here. Eric, will you take this group right here? Okay. So we've got all these people right here against the wall. Okay. Well, the papers are being passed out. We'll get those. Okay. Why don't you go and take this front corner? Bring your chairs and take this front corner. You got them. Okay. So we've got these. Let's go two tables. Let's go the front three tables right here. Or actually, no. We're gonna do this. Hang on. We're going to go to the back three tables. You're going to go right in this area right here. Okay? Yes. We might have to slide the tables so that you guys got a little room there, but we're going to go right in that area right there. Okay? Just stay right there. And you guys, why don't you... Or here. Better idea. You guys go to that corner. So the back three go to that corner. And who's got them? Oh, you're with us? Excellent. Frank. Yeah, take them. Are you leading a group?
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, why don't you two do that? Okay. And then how many is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes. Why don't you go to the back corner with them? Yeah. You're going to the back corner with them. Yeah. Sorry. It was. We changed it up. What's that?
I don't do it. Yeah, it gets convoluted. Once I put them down, they were down.
I don't have options.
Yeah. That was the interesting. That's really, it's interesting how you can't hear. You know, it's like, wait a minute, why is it? Yeah. No, it's interesting. Okay. Does everybody have a handout? Okay, we got a couple right here. Miriam's doing a great job. So who's leading this meeting? Who's leading this over here in this corner? Iski's got this. Hey, Jim, are you? Why don't you take this corner one right over here? Yeah. Okay. Miriam, do you have an extra handout? No. You might have to use one of theirs. Okay, we've got a group right here. Who's got this group? Ore. More service. Look at that. Oh, you've got Brian? Okay, you got Brian. Excellent, excellent. Eric's got this group here. Okay. And Craig. Perfect. Go get them, boys. And ladies. Real quick, we're sorry we might not have enough handouts, so if you guys just use the back of your handouts and kind of follow along with the person next to you with the headings that we have, thank you.
Excuse me. Hello. I'm sorry to interrupt the process. I just wanted to say one more thing. I'm sorry to interrupt the groups, but I'm talking to several people who are talking about so the reward for doing this process is irritability, restless, and discontentedness. You're going to feel that really quickly. And part of what's important that we do with the sober eating group is my sponsor talks about sharing in real time. If you really want this freedom, you're going to encounter irritability, restless, and discontentedness really quick. And your mind is going to play all types of tricks on you to get you to go back. And part of the solution for me when I was going through that first 90 days was checking in real time. As soon as those thoughts came up, I was calling, I was texting, I was connecting with other people. Connection with other people will support you through the process. That's something that's really important. That's where we access power, is when we connect with another person. And I tell them exactly, I want to eat a whole pizza right now. I need help. That's something that I just wanted to include, just a little tidbit for you, okay? Yeah.
I'm going to add one thing. I heard a question from Frank's group, which really was a good question, which was, how do I surrender? Right? That's the million-dollar question. If we manufacture that, then we're all going to take a lot of money to the bank. How does one actually surrender, right? And the answer I have is that it begins with being honest with this page. Even if the truth is, I don't want to do this. Even if the truth is, I have no intention of doing this. Even if the truth is, I hated all that mansplaining jerk stuff up there and all the personalities who were acting arrogant or whatever judgment you have, right? The principle is this. If I don't practice alcoholism, I won't have an alcoholic problem. So even if I'm not ready to do this, the willingness to say, this is what it would look like for me to arrest and corner my disease. Even if you say I have too much trauma, I have too much, I'm better than this, I know I can do it. Whatever you're saying to yourself, the process of surrender begins with an honesty.
Phone numbers, just in a very organized way.
For sure, at the end, when you go through this sheet, you'll see a part of supports. I welcome people to invite each other in their groups to use the.
Is that like a solid thing for next year?
Sure. Thank you for the suggestion. Okay. Our group's wrapping up. If you're not finished, some of this could be done, continued. It's ending. There's nothing we could do. Okay. What do we do? We're wrapping. We don't have to pull back. The workshop is ending in a few minutes. I just want to, if I can have a moment before we end. Just a moment. Oh, if you're here, just a moment to just wrap up. Okay. If you're not finished, please find somebody. And continue this. I just want to say this. If Sometimes, you know, we do a men's meeting every Sunday for 100 pounders. It's a group of men who have the burden of 100 pounds or more, who are willing to look at, or who have ever had the burden of 100 pounds or more. And we're willing to look at this discussion that we've been having. We've been doing it for about 12 years. And I want to say this. There have almost been fistfights over this. Right? This is a very, 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 our experience, a very, very sensitive discussion. And what it comes down to for me, based on my experience, is don't touch my food. And I know it's sensitive. And if you're struggling, if you're having, a lot of us may not speak up. I'm speaking for myself, or speak indirectly. Speaking for myself, right? So I'm trying to be direct as possible. If you're having a reaction to this, right, in any way, or it hit a nerve, we're sorry if we don't mean to offend. But what we really want to look at is the beginning of taking an honest look at this discussion of what really does it mean to have freedom from food addiction. Right? And that's the purpose of this, right? That's our intention. No matter, we can change the way we deliver it, right? Maybe we can, I get suggestions every year and so forth. But the aim here is, please, we welcome everybody to this. We invite everybody to do this. Please look at this one thing. Am I trying to keep alive my addiction, right? And that's the beginning of the change. And I hope this was helpful.